Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way, fellow citizens of a nation with an actually coherent, intelligent, and in large part competent president of the United States. What an astounding moment it was last night. I watched it here in New York with a friend of mine, Ron Hartenbaum. We were over at his apartment watching it on TV. I know in Portland, Oregon, Carl Wolfson, who does our morning show on AM 620 KPOJ, who actually has a degree in political science and really is one, in my opinion, one of the more astute political observers around the country, was watching it. And I asked Carl if he could be on with us. Carl, are you there?
I am, Tom. It's good to be on the show with you. And, you know, I agree to come on the show only if Bobby Jindal can give the response to what I say.
Okay, well, we're working on it. Actually, we'll have Craig Shirley in the next hour of Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs, the big PR firm for all the right-wingers. He's going to be on in the next hour, so that will be the rebuttal to everything we both have to say. It'll be interesting. That'll be an interesting conversation. The president said a lot of, interesting. He made some interesting points. My favorite one, frankly, was the equivalent of "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," and you know, really, it was his "We will recover." And I know, Stephanie, you have that clip. We will recover if you can play that. Oh, you don't have it. I'm sorry. It was the clip where he basically said, you know, we're going to make it through this thing. America has tremendous resilience. We've had tough times before, and we're going to make it through this. Carl, your thoughts.
You know, before we get into the substance of the speech, when you mentioned having nothing to fear but fear itself, Tom, I have been thinking about the comparison between President Obama and President Franklin Roosevelt, and not simply the situation in which we find ourselves as a country, but if you look at the kind of leader that Franklin Roosevelt was, the political animal, this is how you would have described Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s, and see if it doesn't apply to Barack Obama right now. Franklin Roosevelt had a talent for commanding the confidence of other people. He had a faith in common people. He had a faith, a deep faith in American democracy. He was politically astute. He was tenaciously consistent as to his ends. He compromised on non-essentials, but rarely on essentials. He was sensitive to public opinion, but also eager to challenge or mold it. He was intellectually curious. He trusted experimentation. This is the kind of president we heard from last night.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, Stephanie has that clip now. Here it is.
I want every American to know this. We will rebuild, we will recover, and the United States of America will emerge stronger than before.
And that just so reminded, you know, Franklin Roosevelt, he didn't just say we have nothing to fear but fear itself. He went on to say, you know, nameless, unreasoning fear that paralyzes forward motion. I'm paraphrasing. I know I'm missing a couple of words there, but essentially the same thing. And that, I started to say cheerleader in chief, and then I realized that the only extracurricular activity that George W. Bush participated in high school, in his prep school, was being a cheerleader. And so I stopped.
Well, I'll tell you, last night, Tom, speaking of cheerleaders, Nancy Pelosi was on her feet. She had everything but pom-poms, and I was thinking she was much happier without George Bush in front of her and Dick Cheney to her right. She was really up. And you know what I loved about the speech is that you and I talk every day on the air in Portland about the commons. And what Barack Obama laid out last night was how government lays the foundation for our common prosperity. He knows his history. He talked about the GI Bill helping create the greatest middle class in the history of this nation. Mm-hmm. And he also asked us to do something other than George, as opposed to George W. Bush, who said, just go shopping. Well, I guess we went shopping for a new president. But he asked parents to help in their kids' education. He asked students not to quit high school. He asked students to make a bargain with the federal government. If you want to go to college, give us national service. He even said to people, if you want to know what's in the recovery bill, go to recovery.gov. Know what's in the economic stimulus package. He asked something of us to participate in our own democracy.
We're talking with Carl Wolfson, a good friend, my co-host, or I guess I'm your co-host, or your how we say it.
Anyhow, we're on the road together.
We do the morning show on AM 620 KPOJ in Portland, Oregon together every morning. 5 days a week. And this is where this particular cut, this is the one, Stephanie, the no tax increase if you make less than $250,000 a year, checks are on the way. This is the one where I think that Barack Obama, as Newt Gingrich was twittering, he's tweeting here and making sarcastic remarks and talking about how he's going to set up the next campaign, the next election, all these jokes and things. This is the one where I think Barack Obama drove a stake into the beast, Stephanie.
In order to save our children from a future of debt, we will also end the tax breaks for the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Now, let me be clear. Let me be absolutely clear, because I know you'll end up hearing some of the same claims that rolling back these tax breaks means a massive tax increase on the American people. If your family earns less than $250,000 a year, $250,000 a year, you will not see your taxes increased a single dime. I repeat, not one single dime. In fact, the recovery plan provides a tax cut. That's right, a tax cut for 95% of working families. And by the way, these checks are on the way.
So what he did was he said, if you're listening to the Republicans, if you're voting with the Republicans, you are in the camp of either because you actually have that kind of an income or because you're dumb enough to think that you're part of them. You are in the camp of the top 2% of Americans economically. And I just thought it was a masterstroke.
He put an end to the con game, right? Yeah. With all the cameras and how many billions of people were watching worldwide, he put an end to the con game right there. And really, the speech was a complete rejection, not just of conservative policy, Tom, but certainly the Bush administration. He said, we will no longer hide the cost of the Iraq war. No more no-bid contracts for Iraq. The Cold War era weapons, a thing of the past. We're going to end tax breaks for companies that ship our jobs overseas. And while he was destroying the legacy of George Bush and 30 years of Reaganomics, he did it so eloquently.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. And you mentioned Gitmo. Here he is talking about how we're going to close Gitmo.
There is no force in the world more powerful than the example of America. And that is why I have ordered the closing of the detention center at Guantanamo Bay and will seek swift and certain justice for captured terrorists. Because living our values doesn't make us weaker, it makes us safer, and it makes us stronger. And that is why I can stand here tonight and say without exception or equivocation that the United States of America does not torture. We can make that commitment here tonight.
I think the end of torture was not having to watch George Bush give another speech before Congress, actually. Tom, I think Chris Matthews said something very incisive after the speech. You remember how Ronald Reagan had his welfare queen story, which was all bogus? Barack Obama is really pointing out what Chris Matthews said. Americans are angry at the rot at the top. Tom? Okay. I think we lost Tom there, but I made the point that Chris Matthews was talking about the speech and talking how Americans are now upset with the rot at the top. That was Chris Matthews' phrase. In other words, the bankers, those who deregulated in Congress or those who let transnational corporations write our laws are now the focus of America's anger, really. And that's evident that Americans are finally getting it. So a brilliant speech, as Tom said last night. And there were a few things in it that progressives might have a problem with. Clean coal, there's no such thing. Social Security reform, I'm not sure we quite need that. But on the whole, a brilliant presentation by President Obama. We'll be back on the Tom Hartman Show.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. Carl Wolfson on the line with us, my co-host on AM 620 KPOJ in the morning show in Portland, Oregon, and in my opinion, one of the more astute and one of the most astute political observers in the country. Carl, if you've got the buttons there all figured out, see if you can fire off Franklin Roosevelt just for a moment for
us. Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Now, that was the language of the 30s. I would submit to you that using the language of the 21st century, Obama said the exact same thing last night.
He did say the last thing. And, you know, the comparisons have been made between the historic times. And for those who don't know, when Franklin Roosevelt took office in 1933, unemployment was at 25%. And at 11 a.m. on his inauguration day, at 11 a.m., an hour before he took the oath of office, America's banking system collapsed. President Hoover hadn't slept. He looked like a broken man. He said we were at the end of our string. FDR proclaimed a four-day bank holiday, called Congress into special session. Within 72 hours, he had emergency banking legislation passed and signed into law that regulated the banks, and deposits, of course, were guaranteed. And that set the stage for the New Deal. And frankly, Tom, to think about what President Obama has done to get this economic stimulus bill through Congress in his first month is really breathtaking. And I think he did a great job last night within his speech of explaining some of the things that are in that bill and how they can help average Americans.
Yeah. Now, here's something that baffles me, Carl, and you're the guy with the poli-sci degree. The Constitution requires the president to annually in at roughly this time of year, as I recall it's in March, but maybe I'm wrong, but in any case, annually, to submit a report to Congress about the State of the Union. Thomas Jefferson was so shy, he submitted it in writing.
That's right.
He's not a public speaker. But and the whole tradition of a hoop-de-doop around it is relatively recent, if my recollection is correct.
Yeah.
So why are people saying this was a report on the State of the Union? It did satisfy that constitutional requirement. Why is everybody saying this wasn't a State of the Union address?
Well, I think from procedure, since the inauguration happens every 4 years, and just by common practice, the State of the Union gets pushed to the back bench, as it were, by the inauguration address. Mm-hmm. But it was a State of the Union address.
Yeah, it certainly was legally.
Yes. Required by law under the Constitution. As you mentioned, it does not have to be an oral speech. It can an oral address. It can be a written.
It has to be a report to Congress.
That's right.
That's the phrase,
in any
as
form.
I recall. I don't have
in
my pocket
form.
Constitution here in New York with me, but my recollection is that the Constitution, Article 1 of the or Article, I guess it must be Article 2 of the Constitution if it's the executive branch, requires that the president – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, let's put it this way. President Obama used the occasion as a State of the Union and used it to maximum advantage for him and I think for the country.
Yeah, did a brilliant one. Stephanie, do you have the clip of MSNBC when they said, "Oh, God, play that for us. This is going to Jindal."
Republican response to President Obama. It is entitled, Americans Can Do Anything. Here's Governor Jindal.
Oh, God.
Good evening and happy Mardi Gras. I'm Bobby Jindal.
I think it was Chris Matthews.
Yeah, and somebody was like, oh, God.
I think it was Chris. You know, Christine Alexander, our co-host on The Morning Show, and I had this debate who that was, whether it was Keith or Chris. And one of our callers called in and said, play it again. And when we played it a second time, I think it's Chris Matthews who said, oh, God. And I think he was speaking for all of us. Jindal, you know, in comedy, you have material and style, your material and your presentation. One, his style was so amateurish and the production was so amateurish, but you look at the content of his response, Tom, and it was just breathtaking in the lies he set out before the American people.
Yeah, it really was startling. I was just, you know, how can he say that? And who gives a damn anymore? And how, you know, I mean, basically what he was trying to do was recycle old Reagan-era talking points, and it's not the Reagan era anymore.
And who would bring up Katrina if you're a Republican, frankly?
From Louisiana.
From Louisiana, and using that as an example. And you know, Tom, it was the same thing that Ronald Reagan said. Government is the bad guy. Never trust government. When they show up, it's always going to be bad. And, you know, Louisiana, to my figuring, got $175 billion money after Katrina. And the reason FEMA's response was so bad was that George Bush had gutted the agency and put hacks in charge of it instead of government professionals.
And demoted it from being a cabinet agency to being a subsidiary of Homeland Security.
Right. And there was Bobby Jindal talking about corruption in Washington. Do the words Jack Abramoff mean anything to him or his party? He was talking about huge spending. Well, which party inherited a surplus and gave us a $1.2 trillion deficit? You tell me.
Yeah, yeah. We have just a minute here to wrap this segment up, Carl. I'm curious what you thought were the most important points that both were made by Obama and by Jindal, for that matter.
Well, I tell you, I thought it was very refreshing to see a president of the United States stand before the country and the Congress and talk about education, health care, and energy. To me, he explained the situation we were in very much as FDR would have explained it in a fireside chat. In fact, he did. He didn't talk down to us. He didn't talk up to us. He gave us the scenario by which we find ourselves in this situation. And more importantly, he was hopeful about the future. He said that from this crisis is a great opportunity to be Americans again. And what I started with on this show, that government lays the foundation for our common prosperity. That is the language of the commons that we as progressive talk about every day on the show. I think the details will follow, but he's got a progressive heart at his core, Tom.
Yeah, very well said, Carl. Carl, thanks for dropping in.
Hey, my pleasure.
And sharing with me a reality check. It was a really, really long day for me here yesterday in New York, and I was half awake as I was watching the thing, but it really got my attention. When Bobby Jindal came on, man, did that, oh, well, actually, I was, by the end of that, I was ready for the loony bin.
Anyway. I don't think there are a lot of happy Republican faces this morning.
There you
Tom.
Go. Oh. Carl Wolfson, you can check it out over at 620kpoj.com. Thanks, Carl.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. Tomorrow and Friday, I'll be broadcasting from Washington, D.C., from the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC. That should be entertaining. We'll get the conservative take on everything that's going on, and we'll have some great debates and conversations, and, of course, your calls. On Saturday, the 7th of March in Seattle, Louise and I will be there for the one-day cruise with KPTK AM 1090 on the Royal Argosy. That should be great fun, a three-hour cruise. On March 19th, Thursday, Chicago, Illinois, I'm debating Michael Medved, sponsored by Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com.
of course, the radio station there, and pick up a ticket and show up. Hey, I'll need all the help I can get, all the moral support I can get. And on May 2nd, on Saturday, May 2nd, I will be at the Green Festival in Denver, Colorado, giving a keynote speech. The information is at greenfestivals, that's plural, .org/Denver. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270. And James in Victorville, California. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. First thing off the get-go, I would like to thank you and Dr. Feingold for the work you've done for children with ADHD, because I'm one of those children.
Well, you're welcome, James. Me too.
us as Americans really needed to hear that speech last night. I mean, I feel a lot better about the situation knowing that the person who's driving the country actually has a brain between the ears. But if you would have looked closely at the other side of the aisle, it just a sour look. You know, it looked like they almost had to be forced up to give those standing ovations.
Yeah, yeah. There were some very unhappy Republicans in that room. And
yes, there were.
It was fascinating to watch the looks on their faces and the occasional, you know, the occasional cutaway shot where you'd see the rolled eyes and whatnot. Good point, James. Thanks a lot for the call and for your kind words. Mona in Iowa. Hey, Mona, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I just need a reconfirmed or understanding of how all of this is going to help us, the Americans.
All of this being things like the stimulus package and
right.
Dealing with the virus and things. Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem that we have, Mona. Unrestrained, absolutely unregulated capitalism, what's referred to sometimes as laissez-faire or laissez-faire capitalism, is what is at the basis of the game Monopoly, if you've ever played Monopoly. You know, the goal is to end up being the one person who basically controls the world. That's the flaw that's built into capitalism. And it was one of the flaws. It was the primary flaw that Karl Marx highlighted in Das Kapital. And it's real. It's a very real flaw. It doesn't mean that capitalism is a bad system, but it has that flaw.
No.
And if you can fix that flaw, and we have in this country on numerous occasions, in fact, in the very founding of this country, in many ways, we fixed that flaw. We fixed that flaw in part in 1881 when Senator Sherman from Ohio introduced the Sherman Antitrust Act, which made it impossible for somebody to actually win the game of monopoly, you know, of capitalism. But Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing that in 1981-82, and it hasn't been enforced since then. So what we have is – go ahead.
But isn't there a fear of new entrepreneurship, new businesses starting up, businesses closing?
Well, here's the point. What we have had for 28 years now or 29 years is we have had raw, naked, unrestrained capitalism. And it has, and it's destroying itself. It's wandered into the, or it has evolved into, and it's a natural progression into the cancer stage of capitalism. And without putting back into place those regulations that were put into place in the late 19th century and during the 1930s, during the Great Depression, the Glass-Steagall Act, for example, that prevented banks from getting in the business of gambling in the stock market, which Phil Graham pushed, you know, was rolled back in 99 at Phil Graham's efforts, but it was signed into law by Bill Clinton to roll that thing back. I mean, this is something that over the last 28 years, both Republicans and a startling number of Democrats, including several who are advising Obama right now, which concerns me, have bought into this. Yes, yes.
Let me interrupt for just 1 second. Isn't it the housing market, the way it is because the government stepped in and said everybody deserves a home.
No,
no,
that's
matter
not why
if they
it is.
Can afford it or what.
That's, Mona, that's not why it is. That's the talking point that the Republicans are putting out. And as a matter of fact, you know, the Housing Act of whatever it was in the late 90s, and there was one under the Carter administration as well. Both Carter and Clinton were saying we need to make housing available to more people. What they were talking about was ending redlining. It used to be that if you lived in neighborhoods that were predominantly African American, regardless of your income, you couldn't buy a house. You know, redlining was a very common practice, and they wanted to outlaw that. What Reagan did is he used that same language, and Bush, they used that same, and particularly George W. Bush Jr., this is really went on steroids at the last, they used that language of let's let everybody have a home. And I've played the clip before, I can't play it right now because I'm in a studio in New York, but they've used the language of that to deregulate banking so that the bankers could rip people off. More than 60% of all the subprime loans were given, honest to God, 60% of all the subprime loans were given to people who qualify for prime loans. And those people were never told that they qualified for prime loans, Mona. And so therefore they were ripped off by the bankers.
What about all the other millions of families that weren't ripped off that are paying their mortgages and now they can't get refinancing on them because there's no money.
They can't get refinancing on them because we have had grand theft in the United States. Trillions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, at least, and arguably trillions of dollars have been stolen by people in the banking system. And this is something that we have been warned about for years, by the way. Kevin Phillips, the Republican who wrote The Coming Republican Majority back in the 1960s, wrote a book called Bad Money 7 years ago, in which he exactly predicted what was going on, and he said it was the direct consequence of the lack of regulation. You had Alan Greenspan saying when Bill Seidman first invented these collateralized debt obligations, these CDOs, where they would tranche mortgages, they'd aggregate mortgages, slice them up, and sell them off as a way of saving the SNLs. And Seidman said, we're going to track those, we're going to be public about it, we're going to be transparent about it, and he was, and he did it right. And he went to Greenspan and he said, these should be regulated. There is no regulation mechanism for these. And Greenspan said, oh, no, we believe in the free market. And so then he went to the head of the SEC and he said, the SEC should, if not regulate these things, at least keep track of them so that someplace somebody right. knows how many are being written. And the head of the SEC under the Bush administration, actually that was the George Bush senior administration, said, no, we're not going to do that because that would be inconsistent with the free market. And to this day, we know that there's something in the neighborhood of $600 to $900 trillion worth of those things out there in the world. We have no idea where they are. We don't know how many are good and how many are bad. This is the result, pure and simple, of the ideology that has been driving the Republican Party and some elements of the Democratic Party. It's the Thatcher for the last 28, 29 years. It's the same ideology that drove Margaret Thatcher, which is why the basket case economies in Europe are Ireland and the United Kingdom, just like the United States is evolving, has evolved, has slid into being a basket case economy. We actually have been for about a decade. It just took us a decade to figure it out that these banks were dead men walking. So,
you mentioned Ireland. I think you need to check that out because I think what they're doing now is no corporate taxes.
No, not true. Ireland has a lower corporate tax rate than we do, but the corporations in Ireland pay more in corporate taxes than we do. We have a 35% tax rate. They have a 15% okay. tax rate. But the fact of the matter is that the average corporation in America pays far less than that. Most of your Fortune 500 companies are paying virtually nothing in taxes. We are the second, in terms of what's actually paid in taxes, the United States is the second lowest in the world. And in terms of what is actually paid in taxes by corporations, Ireland is in the middle of the pack. Again, you're reciting Republican talk points, Mona, that are based on lies. You've heard lies, and you know, it's tragic that you're repeating them. And to your original point about small entrepreneurs, you were saying, how can entrepreneurs get into this? Don't we have a legitimate concern that small businesses aren't going to get into the workplace? If we start enforcing the rules that prevent monopoly from happening, we can go back to what we had before Ronald Reagan, which was when the local dry cleaning store was owned by the same family for 30 years. The local grocery store was owned by the local grocery store. Right. The local tailor was actually the local tailor. And now, right now, you walk into any shopping center. I mean, you may be old enough to remember 30 years ago, you walked into a strip mall or a shopping center, and 90% of the stores were locally owned. You walk in today, none of them are locally owned. And the reason why is because Reagan stopped enforcing the antitrust laws. If we brought those back, those would open opportunities for entrepreneurs. It would release the creativity of the American people. The creativity of the American people has been destroyed by these Republican policies.
Okay, whatever. I mean, we'll agree to disagree on that one. But I got one more simple question about the government.
Okay, we got about 15 seconds, Mona, so a quick one.
Sure. What about going in? I know that you've gotten a driver's license.
Yes.
Okay. What is that method that you think is good about the government?
Well, it took me 20 minutes to get a driver's license. It worked just fine. I have no problem with that. I have a pilot's license. I have an engineer's license with the FCC. I got a bunch of different licenses. They all work just fine. If your point is that government can't do anything right, then you should call the local police department and say, please don't protect my home anymore. And if I'm murdered, don't investigate it. If your point is the government can't do anything right, call the local fire department and say, and you can put a sign out in your front yard. If my house catches on fire, please don't do anything, because I know the government can't do anything right. And, you can have a libertarian paradise, Mona.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Essentially the message last night from Barack Obama. Come on, let's work together on these things. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars. And I'll tell you, the piggies, they are piggerizing.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have to
have white shirts. So nice and clean. Yes, it's the white-shirted piggies at the Northern Trust Bank. Northern Trust, they received $1.6 billion. That's $1,600 million from you and me, our tax dollars. Well, actually, from our children. Our children will have to pay probably around $3 billion with interest. They actually got the money from the Chinese, but you get the point. And what did they do with that money? Well, turns out that they threw a big party last week in L.A. They put up hundreds of their clients and employees at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. I've stayed at that hotel. That is one fancy, expensive. That's the hotel where Ken Lay and Arnold Schwarzenegger had their famous or infamous secret meeting about a month before the whole Gray Davis attack was launched. That brought the rolling power blackouts started that brought down Gray Davis and turned Arnold Schwarzenegger into governor. It was the Beverly Wilshire where Ken Lay met with him. And anyhow, that and the Ritz-Carlton and Marina Del Rey, and they threw this huge fancy party. Millions of bucks they spent on this thing, and after they eliminated 450 jobs, by the way, after they took our bailout money, and they said, well, we didn't use the bailout money for the party. Yeah, that's like saying, I had dinner last night with some friends, but I didn't use my paycheck. I used my tax return from 4 years ago. Come on. Give me a break. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Sarah in Marysville, Washington. Hey, Sarah, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Sarah?
I'm all right. My point was, I hear Bobby Jindal or whatever his actual name is saying, oh, we're borrowing from our children. Our children are going to have to be paying us, paying off our debt. Well, okay, forgive me if I'm wrong. I'm in my early 30s. That means I was born in the late 70s. The people who were born from the late 60s all the way into the 80s, we are the children of the Reaganomics.
Yep.
We are the ones paying off the debts of those horrible policies. We are the ones losing our homes and our jobs and all this stuff. Why is it so bad that we are asking these people who've gotten filthy rich to pay their taxes, to pay the debt that they put us in?
Good point. The average American taxpayer right now is paying between $2,000 and $3,000 a year on interest, out of their taxes, on interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up in 8 years and George Herbert Walker Bush in the following four, but mostly that Ronald Reagan ran up when he took us from under $1 trillion in debt to almost $3 trillion in debt, is paying a couple of up to 2,000 and in some cases three. It depends on how you calculate it and whether you're using median, mean, or average, but a couple thousand bucks a year out of the average taxpayer's tax bill is going to pay interest on the debt that Reagan ran up. And now we're going to have to start paying another couple thousand dollars a year in interest on another $4 or $5 trillion in debt that George W. Bush ran up. It's crazy. And for these guys, you know, for the Republicans, for Bobby Jindal to get up there and say, oh, we can't borrow any more money in the name of our children to run these. This is what Jude Winiski came, you know, I've done a couple of shows about this, laid it out. I wrote an op-ed about this a while back for Common Dreams. Jude Winiski, back in the 1970s, when the Republicans were trying to come back from the wilderness after the defeat of Goldwater in 64, he came up with what he called the two Santa Clauses theory. And he said, A, we have to become a Santa Claus like the Democrats are. That is, we have to have, you know, embrace social programs, stop attacking Social Security. Even though our long-term goal is to destroy it, we need to stop talking about it. And number two, and in fact, we can even, you know, increase government spending by things like military programs and thereby indirectly stimulate the economy. And number two, we need to be the Santa Claus of tax cuts. And he said what that will do is it'll force the Democrats to become the anti-Santa Claus of tax increases in order to balance the budget. And that was and then about 6 months after Winiski came up with his two Santa Claus theory and wrote about it in the Wall Street Journal, Arthur Laffer came up with his crazy Laffer curve, and Reagan took this thing and ran with it, and it sounded very logical to people for a while there in the 80s, and seemed like it was pretty good times. Although in my comment, you know, I kept saying, "Give me a $3 trillion credit card, I'll show you good times," but now the bill is due. And you know, it's just whacking us upside the head, and it is so very wrong. Sarah, excellent point. Thank you for calling and making it. Damon in New Orleans. Hey, Damon, what's up?
Hey, man. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening to our friend Bobby Jindal, the governor here,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I'm not gonna hold you up. All I'm gonna say is, as long as they keep preaching to that 15% of the world who doesn't like Barack Obama, they'll never win another election. At least they won't win in 2012. So,
yeah, I think you're right. I think Bobby Jindal shot himself in the foot hugely last night, and so did the Republican Party. Yeah, but you know, time will tell. Damon, thanks a lot for the call. It'll be interesting tomorrow at CPAC to hear what the conservatives have to say. Chuck in Idaho, we got a minute to the break. Chuck, what's up?
Hey, you know, I've got just more of a comment than anything else here, Tom. I'm gonna pull off the road real quick. You know, I was listening to Ed Schultz the other day, and he kind of had just an offhanded comment that I've really been thinking about. If we were to, the federal government were to issue a credit card, and everybody that's got MasterCard, American Express, whatever, if we had the ability to transfer our balances to the government credit card at a reduced interest rate, you know, the interest rates of up to 30% or whatever yeah. are killing people out here. Yeah. But the government would, at that point, be able to have a repayment schedule from us, and instead of just giving Citibank and the rest of these folks,
Chuck, what you're describing is what Franklin Roosevelt did with mortgages in the 1930s. He created an organization, a federal agency that bought. But back then, most mortgages were 5-year balloon mortgages. But he bought mortgages from millions of people, and that agency actually made a profit over a 30-year period. On the credit card side of it, I'd be very wary of that. You're talking really nationalizing banks. I mean, that's like Soviet Union stuff. I wouldn't do it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us, welcoming back to the program, is Craig Shirley, president of Shirley & Bannister Public Affairs, and the biographer of Ronald Reagan in the book Reagan's Revolution, The Untold Story of the Campaign That Started It All, sbpublicaffairs.com, the website. And Craig, Sean asked me to read something or share something with my listeners as a setup for this.
Oh, no, you don't need to share it. I just thought you might be interested. I was admiring your biography and as a setup for our interview. By the way, congratulations on the listing in Talkers. That's magnificent.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, being the number one progressive talk show host. It's
right.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. But
unfortunately,
I've got a lot of copy here and nothing's highlighted, so I'm not sure exactly what you wanted me to share with folks.
So go for it. Because I was reading up on you before our interview,
mm-hmm.
Issues. We agree on many issues as far as corporations and human rights and individual rights and things like that. And that was the point of that piece that I drafted, which is going to run, in Politico in the next day or two.
So tell me about it.
Essentially, this is that...
Is this the Vox populism you're talking about?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Is we are close to a tipping point, and really it doesn't matter whether it's Republican or Democrat. All this happened, quite frankly, under a Republican administration. With the unchecked growth of corporate power, with the unchecked growth of governmental power, with regulators turning a blind eye to corruption on Wall Street by investment bankers and Wall Street financiers, is that there really are two sets of rules in this country now. And Barack has unfortunately confirmed it with saying there will be no lobbyists in this administration, and now I believe now we're up to 12, including Joe Biden's chief of staff, who are all registered lobbyists. People who cheated on their taxes are either in the cabinet or had to have their names withdrawn because they couldn't pass muster. And that there is a reorganization of power in this country away from the citizenry and toward the moneyed and political elites. And
well,
I think it's a very, very dangerous thing.
First of all, Craig, I would say that if that's all you've got, you're in trouble. Let's call it corruption for the purposes of discussion. The corruption that you see within the Obama administration is a tiny fraction of what we saw during Reagan's administration. I mean, he had more senior officials in the Reagan administration were convicted of felonies than of any administration in the history of the United States to this day. Of the corruption in the Bush, the George W. Bush administration, where he put people who were working for regulated industries in charge of regulated industries.
Well, you're comparing two presidencies over the period of 8 years, and I would challenge you on Reagan at many levels. Number one is that most of that was related to Iran-Contra, and it's been proven demonstrably that he knew nothing about Iran-Contra, and a lot of those.
Well, that he didn't remember
well, a lot of
it
those
anyway.
And a lot of those convictions were overturned as well. So you have it there. Number one is that Reagan was in office for 8 years and Obama's been in office for 1 month.
Okay, but it's hardly
a fair comparison.
The point that you made, though, I thought it was interesting the way that you started this thing out, and
what I'm saying is that there was a failure of regulation.
And
I beg your pardon?
That there was a failure of regulation over the last 8 years.
No, there was a failure of enforcement.
Well, there was also a failure. Yes, I agree. And in fact, the SEC didn't do the job that they were supposed to do. And they were certainly told on a number of occasions that they should be doing the job that they were told to do.
Right.
But, you know, Bill Seidman, the guy who ran the Resolution Trust Corporation, who took over the failed SNLs during the last Bush administration, the last Bush administration.
I got stuck with a building because of that.
Okay, so you know. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, there were a few people who made a lot of money on that. You know, Neil Bush with Silverado Savings and Loan made a whole pile of money. But by and large, you know, when Bill Seidman took these things over and invented collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, invented the thing that has become the, you know, is described by some as the neutron bomb of economics, he went to Greenspan. And he went to Bush Sr. and he said, these things need to be regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told no. You know, Alan Greenspan said these are sophisticated instruments that are being traded by sophisticated traders in a free marketplace, and this will be our opportunity to – and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, I've got the exact quote. I played it on the air before. My listeners are familiar with it. And this will be our opportunity to prove how the free market works. And it was. It proved that in the it's like saying, let's have a football game, but we're not going to have any referees. We're not going to have anybody running a stopwatch. We're not going to have rules about, you know, how you can touch or treat another player. And
but that's not justification to eliminate the game and take away the players and to take away the ball and then leave no game left.
Well, I think you're making my point. My point is that's what Phil Graham did.
What
Phil Graham did is he said,
there has to be a certain set of rules. The question is that how far do you go with those rules? And if you're talking about the whole RTC, I mean, look, let's face it, is that the federal government went out of control. There were perfectly good savings and loans that are operating honestly and ethically, but they were caught up. They were swept up in the hysteria of the time and lumped in with the bad ones like Silverado.
Well, it was because there was a run on the banks of the SNLs.
Lincoln Savings and Loan, and a lot of people unnecessarily lost property, lost savings, lost their livelihood because the government overreacted.
But over the long term, Bill Seidman actually made a profit for We the People.
Yes, but only because he realized what was in the portfolios, and that goes to my point, is that the government overreacted. They first lost money in the first 5 years of the RTC, and believe me, I know, I went through this personally, because they had taken over the notes on perfectly good commercial properties, and then were selling them to speculators at 5, 10, 15 cents on the dollar. So somebody who was laden with cash would come in there and buy the mortgage on a building that might be worth $1 million, and they were buying it for $100,000. They're buying a $1 million building for $100,000. It was only until the last 2 years of the Resolution Trust Corporation that they realized the value of the property they had in these portfolios, and they started charging fair market value for these notes instead of 10, 15, 20 cents on the dollar.
So do you think that the Obama administration, with the benefit of hindsight, can say, you know, we're not going to make the mistakes that the Bush senior administration made when they cleaned up the mess caused by deregulation of the SNLs during the Reagan administration? Because we're not going to make the mistake that was made by the Hoover administration when the banks failed 1 hour before Franklin Roosevelt was sworn into office in March of 1933.
Right.
We're not going to make the mistakes that the Hoover administration made as a consequence of the deregulation that occurred largely under the Harding and Coolidge administrations. We're going to do it right.
There was in those days very little regulation.
Well, there was a lot of regulation up until 1921,
actually.
That's
why people were able to buy stocks at 10 cents on the margin.
But that was illegal in 1919, that was illegal.
But by 1929, it was legal.
That's right. It was the Harding administration in 1921 that deregulated all that stuff.
That's just a fact of history. Nobody is arguing for unchecked,
laissez-faire.
There's a difference between laissez-faire and there's a difference also between complete hands off.
Well, laissez-faire means, you know, hands off, essentially. I mean,
it's
French for don't, isn't it? French for let it be free or let it be untouched or some words to that effect. I don't know. I don't speak French, so
neither do I.
You know. I mean, but that's the essence of it. It's just, you know, the completely unregulated market. But you know, we're kind of wandering into an abstract universe. Your comment was, if you like the idea of Jeffrey Dahmer babysitting your children, you'll love the idea of Summers and Geithner running Detroit.
Right.
First of all, you know, that's a pretty grim analogy or metaphor. But secondly, I'm not seeing any indication that Summers or Geithner are going to be running Detroit. The question is whether they're going to give money to a corporation so it can continue to operate.
And I would argue that now here's the populist argument, and if you're arguing for subsidizing the corporation, I would say that is the elitist position. The populist position should be let that corporation fail. Let the marketplace determine whether or not – I mean, if Detroit can't turn out good cars, then it shouldn't be operating. That's just that plain and simple.
You know, if we didn't have so many car manufacturers in this country that are not American corporations – that where you have a country that could that in the past we actually fought a world war against.
Yes.
Controlling the manufacture of autos.
Right.
Then I might be inclined at some level to agree with you, or at least to say let's break up some of these companies into their individual brands and let Cadillac become Cadillac and let Buick become Buick or whatever as they once were.
But we do have thriving automobile manufacturers in the South. They just happen to have lower labor costs.
And they happen to be foreign corporations, and all their profits are going offshore. And that's not pro-American. That's not populist in my mind.
In South Carolina, what is a foreign-made car anymore?
Well, that's see, now we're getting into trade policy. We're going to have to pick that conversation up next time you're on. Craig Shirley, SBPublicAffairs.com. Craig, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Once was a thought inside my head. Before I'd reach 30, I'd be dead. But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Yeah, the flow seems to be moving in a fairly progressive direction in America. Fine thing that it is. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick overview of some of the things in the news. Dick Durbin, the fellow senator of Roland Burris from Illinois, has now called on him to resign. The pressure is really cranking up here now. So we'll see what happens there in Illinois. Today, Republicans in Congress are expected to deliver a day-long rant against Democratic spending legislation. This is the pot calling the kettle black on steroids. They say the bill is loaded with thousands of pet projects that Republican lawmakers inserted, such as $142,500 for emergency repairs for a museum in Austin and $1.425 million for statewide bus facilities. These are Republican insertions, yet they're going to rant about the Democratic spending legislation. CNN Opinion Research poll conducted last night found 68% of those who watched Barack Obama's speech to Congress had a very positive reaction, with 24% additionally indicating they had a somewhat positive response. Only 8% indicated they had a negative reaction. Those are the 8% who, probably very similar to the 8% who still believe the earth is flat. I don't know, maybe Tom Friedman is one of them. Who knows? Anyhow, the Democrats, the labor groups and Democrats are thinking that the Employee Free Choice Act has a good shot. This is something that needs to get moving, in my personal opinion. Right-wing activists, by the way, are launching a preemptive campaign, they're calling it, against Kathleen Sebelius, the Democratic governor of Kansas, for HHS secretary. Operation Rescue is going after her, even though she's a Roman Catholic. They're calling her the most rabidly pro-abortion governor in the country. So, I have never heard of anybody being pro-abortion. Maybe there's a few. I think there's a broad consensus in this country that we want to reduce the number of abortions because we want to reduce and we want to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies. This is just cheap shot stuff. It's really kind of sad, when you get to it. And Bobby Jindal. The response right across the board. I mean, Fox News, this was some of the most important and interesting of the commentary on this. I didn't see it because I just, first of all, I went to bed as soon as he was done talking. But beyond that, the Fox News commentary, he was childish and amateurish. That's Fox News. Charles Krauthammer, the notorious right-wing neocon crazy, says, Jindal didn't have a chance. He follows Obama, who is making speeches in a league of his own. Yep, it's true. He didn't have a chance. And he didn't have a chance because he's the governor of Louisiana, and he's talking about how wonderful Republicans are. And he invokes, believe it or not, he invokes Hurricane Katrina. Amazing. Jack in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Jack, what's up?
Yeah, hi. I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit, go back to the 8%er, Dittohead Mona.
Yeah.
you did a great job of pointing out the government positive management in fire and police services. But the flip side of that is I wonder if she's ever had to deal with a health insurance company or a credit card company trying to resolve any issue.
The majority of bureaucrats in this country are corporate bureaucrats and not government bureaucrats.
Yeah, I'll take the DMV any day over over that system.
Yep.
Yeah, I just want to point that out.
Okay, you did a fine job. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Linda in Miami. Hey, Linda, what's on your mind today?
I had two things. One, I thought his speech was absolutely breathtaking, and it was a true, it was like, oh, my gosh, we have a president that can speak.
Yes.
I'm not embarrassed anymore,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
It was such a pleasure to watch him last night.
Yes.
And my second one was I didn't get the call the day before, and we're listeners of your show, and we got our credit card statement yesterday, and our question was, you know, we used to have a flat rate, 3%, always paid our bills on time, never late, paid them off in full. They jacked it up to 12%. And have they broken any laws? Because didn't they rewrite the credit card industry a few years ago? Didn't they rewrite the bill on that?
They did not break any laws. I can guarantee you that. The credit card industry has been writing the laws for a long, long time, including the bankruptcy laws. And you know, all the more the shame and all the more the crime. But what has happened to you is happening to millions of Americans across this country. The credit card companies, the banking companies, some of them are saying, hey, we're in trouble. You know, we gambled and we lost and we screwed up. And rather than cutting the pay of our CEOs and not having parties at the Beverly Wilshire, we're gonna jack up the credit card rates on average Americans. I mean, that's part of the, you know, tax America first, basically. It's a corporate tax on us. And then part of it is that they've set the rules of the game. And, you know, like Bernie Sanders said, we need to bring back usury laws. A lot of money at an interest rate above X, whatever X is. We need to come to a national consensus of what that X is. I would argue that it shouldn't be, you know, more than 10 or 12%. And although, you know, in the past that got blown through, you know, when Volcker was jacking up interest rates to try and stop inflation from the way that we financed the Vietnam War. But that's a whole other story. But we do need to do something about it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Our full Monty alert. I don't think Stephanie has the music for that. So you can just imagine the, you know, hey, baby, take off your coat, et cetera. Anyhow, here's the alert. It's a record that can only be broken in Rio de Janeiro. Today, of course, Ash Wednesday. Happy Ash Wednesday to our Catholic listeners. I guess happy isn't the right word, but whatever the greeting is. And yesterday, you know, leading up to it, of course, Carnival, a samba dancer has now worn the smallest scrap of clothing ever in a Carnival parade. The O Globo newspaper said model Dani Spiral sported a sparkly silver headdress, a necklace, matching armbands, and nothing else below the neck but a 3-centimeter, that's 1.2-inch long patch of cloth. From 80,000 spectators. Last year's record was 1.5 inches of cloth. I'm not sure there's that much difference, but anyhow, a record has been broken. I'm sure that was like right at the top of the things you wanted to know about. Let's get back to Frank in Los Angeles listening on K-Talk. Hey, Frank, what's on your mind today?
Well, at least we have a president that doesn't have to learn English as a second language.
Amen.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Democrats should take, should run with an issue of recall elections. And like Jindal and all these Republicans that are opposing, these governors that are opposing and the senators that are opposing the stimulus package, they should run them up for re-election, you know, recall, just like they did Davis in California.
That's a great idea. And that, by the way, was something that was contrived and configured. And in my opinion, the whole thing was a setup that was organized by Ken Lay and the Republicans to bring down Gray Davis. You know, the rolling blackouts in California. I mean, part of it was to make money for Enron, but I think most of it was for political advantage. And you know, that we still don't know the details of the mysterious meeting between Governor Schwarzenegger, then, you know, bodybuilder and TV star Schwarzenegger, and Ken Lay. And Ken Lay took those secrets to the grave with him, assuming that he's actually dead.
I don't even trust him if he's dead.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Good point. Thank you very much for making it. I appreciate it. Frank Patrick in Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Patrick.
Hi, Tom. We've got a Knowles card. My wife has it, and there was a $50 balance on that.
Is it a credit card?
I made the pay. Pardon me?
Is it a credit card?
Yeah, a credit card. Mm-hmm. Store card.
Okay.
I made the payment, and I got the bill, and I checked my checkbook, so I knew the payment was made, but the payment didn't show up, and then there was a $29 late fee on a $50 balance.
Wow.
I could not believe that.
Yeah. The system has run amok. I mean, it's just the system.
And if I can make another quick comment about the term limits in Michigan,
yeah.
They're a disaster.
Yeah,
they're a disaster.
Term limits usually are a disaster because what you end up with is the only group that has the institutional memory necessary for continuity of government are the lobbyists.
Yeah, we have an inexperienced legislature,
right.
Too. That's what our
point.
Trouble is here,
you know,
in Michigan.
The lawmakers don't have a clue what's going on, and the only people who really do know how the system works are the ones who've been there for 20 and 30 years because they're the lobbyists, because you can't term limit lobbyists.
Exactly.
And that's why term limits is such a bad idea. Patrick, thank you very much. You know, good point and very well made. Jim in Phoenix, clean coal?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about it.
Well, you made a comment about that, and, you know, Brock said, you know, we want to get clean coal, and, you know, most progressives don't believe there is such a thing as clean coal, but if you actually take
most scientists don't believe there is such a thing as clean coal.
I'm sorry?
Go to thisisreality.org, or maybe it's .com, it's all laid out right there.
Well, clean coal today is not a reality, but if you look at a plant built today, it is much cleaner than existing facilities. And what I wanted to...
If you're defining carbon dioxide as a pollutant, they are not even 0.001% cleaner than they used to be.
Right. And so that is my point I'm trying to make, is that we need to look at things that are how to get rid of the carbon dioxide. So they are cleaner in terms of all the other pollutants, but you still have carbon dioxide.
Right.
And in fact, the cleaner you burn coal, the more carbon dioxide you produce.
Right.
However, there are materials that absorb carbon dioxide, and the holy grail is that you would somehow capture it and then pump it into the ground where it will stay there for a millennium.
Right, or figure some use for it. You know, take that carbon and out of the carbon dioxide and recycle it in some way. Use it to make plastics or polymers or whatever. I mean, there's lots of carbon-based compounds out there that are relatively stable.
Right. Well.
Carbon sequestration absolutely is, as you said, the holy grail.
But we haven't
achieved it yet.
Right, but we need to invest in it. Now, the other thing that we have to do is look more innovatively, and it's not what something like Archer Daniels wants to support, but you can actually grow algae on an acre of land and produce 20 times the amount of biofuel. And algae is a great absorber of carbon dioxide. And you also don't have to use fertilizer, which is a petrochemical-based, or pesticides, which is petrol-based product as well. So
yeah,
the
problem that we have, Jim, with algae or with sawgrass or other grasses, and they're coming up against this limit in Brazil, where about 50% of the fuel used is biofuels, is that it's really obvious and conspicuous with corn. You know, that you're using land that can and arguably should be used to produce food, to produce biofuels, and the agricultural techniques you're using over time are degrading that land to the point where it's progressively less productive.
Which is why you would build a coal fire plant out in the desert of Arizona or in the deserts of California where you can't use it for farmland, you can't grow real.
But why would you build a coal fired plant there? It's pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere that's shared by the entire planet. It's pumping mercury into the air that's falling downwind all over the country. I mean, we're getting when I'm on the East Coast right now, but when I'm on the West Coast, we get wind, we get clouds, we get rain from China that contains mercury from their coal plants. And we got mercury in our fish in Oregon that came from China.
Well, that's all part of the pollution control equipment.
But that's the point. Clean coal does not exist. Clean coal is a dream in somebody's mind. I am all in favor of funding the basic research. I think that's a fine thing. But for the coal industry to run around and spend millions of dollars promoting so-called clean coal and using that as something that may happen in the distant future, this is just like when I was a kid. I remember back in the 60s, one of my best friends, his dad converted his entire house to electric because they were building one of the first nuclear power plants in Detroit. What was it, Point Rock or whatever it was? And they had just built one up in Charlevoix. And they were building these nuclear power plants, and we were soon going to have free electricity. And because we were going to have free electricity, my friend's father turned his he got the oil power, heating plant out of the house and put electric baseboard heating in every room. And because everybody knew that free electricity was coming. How they were selling nuclear power. Industry is selling more coal power, as they're saying, someday it's going to be free of carbon dioxide. We're going to figure out how to sequester this stuff. I'm sorry, we need to bring coal to a screeching halt right now or as quickly as we can because we are above 350 parts per million, of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. And that's the critical threshold that can literally destroy most complex life on this planet.
Well, my point was not that we start building coal, but that we don't put a black list, a name on it that say we stop the research because, 10 years ago...
But we need to put them in separate boxes. Carbon sequestration research is something I absolutely agree with you. We need to be, pumping as much as we can, effort as we can into that. But carbon sequestration research has nothing to do with clean coal. I mean, ultimately, at some point in the future, it may, just like ultimately at some point, if they can figure out fusion, we might have free electricity or something. But that's not what it's all about. What you've got is an industry out there that is playing a giant con game with us.
Well, but we're not building any coal plants here. China definitely is, and they're building a coal plant, one a month or one a week. I can't remember what the statistics is.
I think it's about one a week.
But to make it so that people do not want to support research, I think is not right.
Well, nobody's suggesting that the research shouldn't be supported.
Take a look at the electronics industry. There, for every decade, people would say it's impossible to build a chip smaller and faster. You're bumping up against the laws of physics, and the industry continues to invest in that and research, and we prove the pundits wrong.
It gets faster and faster, smaller, and cheaper and cheaper. And the same thing is happening, by the way, right now with solar technology. The same thing is happening with wind technology. There's a whole variety.
I am a huge supporter of solar.
Let's retire the phrase clean coal because there is no such thing right now. People need to check out This Is Reality. I'm pretty sure it's .com. There is no such thing as clean coal. What there is the possibility of figuring out ways to capture carbon out of the atmosphere. But we don't even have that down. There's so much work that needs to be done on that. We have so far to go on that. 45 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What's your name?
the loonies are really and truly loony out there. I'm telling you, Bobby Jindal, I think he's gone over the edge. I think he's gone around the corner of this guy. Either he needs to find a new speech writer. I just don't get it. Here's a clip from Jindal's speech last night.
While some of the projects in the bill make sense, their legislation is larded with wasteful spending. It includes $300 million to buy new cars for the government, $8 billion for high-speed rail projects such as a magnetic levitation line from Las Vegas to Disneyland, and $140 million for something called volcano monitoring. Instead of monitoring volcanoes, what Congress should be monitoring is the eruption of spending in Washington, D.C.
Now, first of all, there is no funding specifically for a high-speed rail project from Vegas to Disneyland. I mean, there's funding for high-speed rail programs around the country, and maybe one of them is going to end up connecting Nevada with California. Wouldn't that be a fine thing? But this $140 million for volcano monitoring that he's condemning, if you go back and read the legislation, what it actually is, the $140 million I'll read it to you. This is right from the USGS, the United States Geological Survey, Surveys, Investigations, and Research. For an additional amount for surveys, investigations, and research, $140 million for repair, construction, and restoration of facilities, equipment, replacement, and upgrades, including stream gauges. That's like, you know, the Mississippi River. Is it going to go over the top of the dams or of the whatever they call those things? And seismic and volcanic monitoring systems, national map activities, and other critical deferred maintenance and improvement projects. So Bobby Jindal may not be living on the big island of Hawaii where you actually have to worry about the lava flow coming to get you, or near Mount St. Helens or Mount Hood or some of the, which is actually an active volcano, although it hasn't blown in about 100 years. He may not live near one of those places where there is a legitimate concern. He may not live on a fault line in California where this kind of equipment. See, this is all about the USGS, the United States Geological Survey, monitoring the potential for natural disasters. But one of the things that $140 million would pay for, and this is, by the way, all just simply deferred maintenance. In other words, stuff that was ignored during the Bush administration. And therefore, it's breaking down, doesn't work anymore. It includes equipment that would monitor stream, they call it stream gauges. In other words, what is the flow and what is the height of the rivers? So it is bizarre. It is bizarre. And this is all they've got. This is all they've got is to somehow campaign on being against government. Like, And they like to say that Democrats hate America first crowd. Last I looked, our government was us. We are all Americans. Alan in New York City. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Discussing the credit card rates and what's going on, I just wondered what your view was. I remember when credit cards were first introduced, the interest was tax deductible. And
right.
that encouraged a lot of people to use credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan eliminated that. Why do you think no one has considered restoring the tax deduction as a stimulative measure?
Well, it would be a stimulative measure in as much as it would encourage people to go deeper into debt. And I don't think that increasing debt in the United States is a good and healthy way to stimulate the economy, frankly. It was originally put into place as a subsidy to the banks, just like the credit card, just like the deduction for home mortgages was put into place as a way of stimulating people to buy a house and also giving a little extra money to the banks by virtue of that. And frankly, I have some real concerns and doubts about the home mortgage deduction. I'm not sure that that's such a great idea either. I don't think that broadly speaking, these things where you have the possibility of unintended consequences, in particular unintended consequences like with credit cards or home mortgage, are good policy. It's what the Republicans refer to as social engineering, and I'm not in favor of it. Sorry, I got a fire alarm going off here in the building, but we'll continue on. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
By the way, I think your home base, the people there, would appreciate volcano monitoring.
You betcha.
Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, you betcha. And Mount Rainier, just a little north of us. Yep.
Yeah, I got two major comments on the energy thing. One first about coal. Creating, quote, clean coal means that you use more energy. The coal less becomes less efficient because it takes energy to do carbon sequestration.
At least with the existing technology. I mean, if they can figure out some catalytic system, it might be relatively energy low, but nobody has even come close to that in a laboratory.
But even if you had totally clean coal, you're still the mining, milling, transport, solid waste that causes water, air, and land pollution.
Yep. Just acquiring the coal itself is a destructive process, yes.
Yeah, well, the mountaintop removal. And then we still have thousands of coal ash ponds like the one that just created the disaster in Tennessee.
Yep. Yep, and then that is toxic and radioactive, by the way, as well.
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't go away.
No,
it doesn't biodegrade or anything. But we need a whole new energy paradigm. And basically, what I propose is we have a new labeling system, not just this thing of green energy and everything else, but we have black energy, gray energy, tan energy, green, and gold energy. And so, like, basically, what we do is we get away from fire.
Mm-hmm.
The ocean, earth, sun, and wind can provide all the energy we need. The ocean and the earth are totally steady. They work 24 hours a day, regardless of season. And we can get massive amounts of energy from them.
Mm-hmm.
And then have sun and wind as adjunct energies.
By ocean and earth, I'm assuming that you're talking about wave energy.
Tidal, they're all
sorts of things. Geothermal energy.
Tidal to wave. I mean, you can build basically tidal dams that acquire water at the high tide. And as the tide goes down, the water running out of that tidal pond actually generates electricity like a dam would.
Right. Hey, yeah.
There are all sorts of things that are just...
Or for that matter, you could simply reverse the turbines, and it could generate electricity as the pool fills, too.
Yes, and then with the geothermal, I mean, every house could be heated by just the warmth of the earth underneath. Or
yeah, just ask anybody in Iceland.
Yeah, or the people in Bahrain that use... wind for cooling the house in 100-degree temperatures.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Jeff, excellent. Thank you very much for sharing. I like that idea. Black energy, green energy, gold energy. Lots of different colors. Cool.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome to our third hour. It is the year 2041. This is me, Suzanne Summers. Suzanne Summers writes in her new book, at 94 years old, healthy, my bones are strong, my brain is working better than ever, sleep is sound and deep, usually 8 or 9 hours nightly, don't need sleeping pills. That's not necessary. Most mornings start with wonderful sex with my 105-year-old husband, Alan, who has embraced the same health regimen. Suzanne Summers, this is our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. You know, sometimes you know what you know. Sometimes you don't know what you know. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
You're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is everything you know wrong about hormone therapy or, for that matter, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy? Suzanne Summers is with us for our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment today. SuzanneSummers.com, her website. Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
I think it's attainable.
It is. And go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
Aiming for it and living my life in such a way that I can make that happen. And I think that what we don't realize is we are in control. We're all kind of sitting back that we're practicing health care where we're really practicing disease care. We wait till we're in a disease state and then in a panic go get a bunch of drugs and hope that that'll do it, and it usually doesn't. And what I do is proactive. I go to the doctor when I'm well. I eat nutritionally to build myself up. I avoid pharmaceuticals whenever I can. I, at present, do not take a single pharmaceutical drug. And I'm living a great, healthy, vibrant, vital, healthy life.
Well, and in fact, you actually went through the illness care part of this some years ago. You had cancer.
Yes. And that was probably the big wake up for me. I remember when I was diagnosed with cancer, it was like being cold cocked.
Yeah.
And I sat there and I thought, how did I do this to myself? What have I been doing?
Yeah.
That I would be sitting here in my late 40s with cancer. What did I do? Mm-hmm. I thought, well, think of all those crafts tables at all the years you've been doing television series and all the crap that was on those tables that I would mindlessly walk by, and a handful of this and a handful of that, and they all were chemicals. Mm-hmm. And think of the fact that you took birth control pills, Suzanne, for 22 years, which we now realize that those of us baby boomers who were given birth control pills and told they were safe, we never fully ovulated. And we were thrilled. We hardly had a period. Thrilled. Well, what does that do to the nature in us?
Yeah.
And as I talked to more and more doctors, what they explained was the brain's job really is to assess if we're reproductive or not. Once we're no longer reproductive, the brain's job is pretty much to get rid of us, because the object of being alive is to perpetuate the species. That's the biology in us.
Sure.
So if you notice, when people hit, and at middle age now, I would say, is earlier and earlier, and it's shockingly, in many cases, mid to late 30s, very definitely now in the 40s, by 50s, you're really falling apart. By 60s, you're a mess. By 70s, you're on so many drugs you can't think. By 80s, you're on your way to a nursing home. That's the present template right here. And so in terms of not ovulating, if a woman isn't really ovulating, the brain goes, whoa, something's wrong here.
Yeah.
This woman's not reproductive. She can't make a baby.
So let's go into the shutdown mode rather than the maintenance mode.
Exactly.
Suzanne, we're talking to Suzanne Summers. She has a new book out. It's called Breakthrough, 8 Steps to Wellness. And I what I found personally fascinating about this, and wanted to bring you on and thank you for sharing a few minutes with us on this, is this idea of bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. This
right.
is something quite different than hormone replacement therapy. And, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger famously shot himself up with testosterone and all kinds of steroids back when he was young, and apparently continued to for most of his life. And that was just to, like, pump you up. But you're talking about something really quite different.
Yes, I am. And I believe that all men at middle age on would do themselves a great service to replace the testosterone they're losing in the aging process. In fact, I've been saying this for about 3 or 4 books. Always, and remember, I'm a filter. Everything I'm saying comes through the doctors I interview. I am not a doctor or a scientist. I'm a passionately interested layperson. But a book came out this year by a noted scientist, doctor, researcher out of Harvard, Abraham Morgenthaler. And what he said this year was, essentially, we've been wrong. Testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. You can take testosterone if you have prostate cancer if it is not active. And here, I think, is the big one. Men with the highest levels of testosterone live the longest and live the healthiest.
But that might just be genetic.
Right.
I mean, is it symptom or cause?
Stress blunts hormone production. Mm-hmm. Aging blunts hormone production or stops it.
Sure.
And if middle age on, that's when things start becoming problematic in one's body.
I understand. I saw you on Larry King talking about this a month or so ago, which is one of the things that really got my curiosity going. And by coincidence, a week or so after that, I had an appointment with my naturopath. And I said, you know, I saw Suzanne Summers on TV, and she was talking about hormone therapy and men should be taking, you know, testosterone and stuff like this. And you know, I'm in my 50s, and I said, you know, what do you think? And he's my age. And he said, well, I tried testosterone for a couple of weeks, he said, and it made me cranky, and so I quit taking it. What was he doing differently or wrong, or what are you doing uniquely differently? And was he doing...
He was slapping it on.
Yeah.
He didn't have a blood test. He didn't have a level. What bioidentical hormones do? And first of all, bioidentical means biologically identical to the human hormone, an exact replica of what our body makes or once made. Now, what you want to do with hormone replacement is replace in exact physiologic doses at your optimal prime. So when did you feel your very best? 35, 40, when you just were just everything, you had energy and vitality, and you slept, and weight wasn't a problem, and even if you ate badly for one day, you didn't gain any weight, not really, and if you did, you get rid of it real fast. All those great things about youth. That's what is great about youth. It's not about your looks. It's about how you feel. When you lose your hormones, you lose all of that. Your vitality diminishes, your energy diminishes, your muscle mass diminishes, your good mood diminishes, your hair doesn't look as good, your skin doesn't look as good, et cetera, et cetera. What the new thinking is, through blood tests or 24-hour urine, I happen to think 24-hour urine is the most accurate. You can see hour by hour where your hormone production is because it fluctuates all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Replacing exactly what you need. Customize it. What you need is different than what my husband needs, is what different than what I need or your wife or whatever. Put back exactly what you're missing. In essence, filling the tank, you know, tipping it off there. And you get to maintain that optimal health. It's not about looking young. It's about optimal health. And in optimal health, all the rest falls in place. Sleeping, weight is normalized, hair, skin looks better, organs and glands operate at optimum.
But isn't there a certain point where you're taking a 1955 or 1965 Pinto and you're putting a brand new Porsche engine in it and you know, creating a problem?
Well, is there a problem?
Might be overpowered, you know. The transmission can't handle it, you know what I mean?
Well,
it's a lousy metaphor, but I think you get the point.
The shell just needs the engine, you know, if it's a Pinto shell or a Mercedes shell, no matter how old the shell is, if it has a brand new engine, it's fine. It'll just carry that shell around.
Yeah.
What always comes up with me is, isn't it normal to menopause and andropause, which is the male menopause, which is real and living, isn't it normal just to age and fade away? And I said, if they would let us die. But we are not allowed to die anymore. Our body would like to die where it used to at the turn of the century. It used to be 40, 45. Think about it, end of reproduction years. Then with antibiotics and sewage, we extended life to 60, 65. And when I was a kid, when people died at 65, it was no big deal. They were old. Well, I'm 3 years away from that. I'm so not ready to check out. Technology. Whether you think you're partaking in technology or not, you are. MRIs, CAT scans, PET scans, sophisticated blood tests, antibiotics, and sewage, etc. These things prolong life. And like it or not, you got to live that long life. Don't you want to live that long life with a brain that's working, with bones that work, with a vibrant energy?
Seems like it would be a great idea. Suzanne, can you stick around over this break? I'd like to get into the difference between bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and hormone, where this stuff comes from, how fringy or straight up it may be in the minds of many people in science, and you've done some amazing research. I'm just fascinated by it. SuzanneSummers.com, the website. She'll be right back with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Who's coming with me? There's a fine line between falling and flying. It all really feels the same, but you gotta do it anyway. Oh, what else can I say?
21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Suzanne Summers. We're pushing our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment here a little bit. I just find the topic fascinating. And SuzanneSummers.com, of course, her website, her new book, Breakthrough, 8 Steps to Wellness. And Suzanne, what about the idea that aging is part of a natural process, that it is in and of itself intrinsically healthy, that there's a difference between, for example, intelligence and wisdom, wisdom being the combination of experience and age along with some, hopefully some intelligence, and that as people age, maybe they really should slow down a little. They should be not out there and active as active, rather they should be the wise elders rather than, you know, trying to desperately hang on to a youth that is slipping away.
Well, it's I perceive it differently in that aging was never supposed to be as long and drawn out as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And the present template of aging is pharmaceutical drugs, which create more pharmaceutical drugs, which eventually have a tackle box full that you can't keep straight, so then you need professional care, and then you can't think anymore, and then you end up in a nursing home. That's what I'm watching. So the new template of aging is, yes, the beauty of aging is wisdom and perspective. I'm starting to get a teeny bit of it, and I like it better than when I was young. I have to say I'm enjoying aging. I like everything about it. And the reason I like everything about it is I feel good. I don't ache. My knees don't hurt. My hips don't hurt. My skin isn't dried out. My brain is working better than it ever has been. And couple that with, I got a little bit of wisdom and perspective. And as I get older, I imagine I'll get more wisdom, more perspective. So if I remain this healthy up to the new projected 90, 100, some say even 120, if I remain healthy, imagine I will be, as I am now, a productive member of society rather than a drain on society. Because I think what people say to me they're worried about is if we have all these old people who are staying alive longer and longer, we're going to have to pay for them. We can't afford them. Yeah, but what if we were alive longer and productive? I write books. I grow my own vegetables. My husband is doing the same program, so we're healthy together. We don't use up our insurance dollars on health care. I go to the doctor I'm paying for.
Pardon my interrupting you, but we're very short on time here. Do you think that, I mean, I'm thinking of Thomas Jefferson in his 70s, you know, writing prodigiously letters, even though he had his hand was cramped with arthritis, but nonetheless, in the years, just literally right up until the months before he died, and John Adams as well. Back 200 years ago, people were living into their 80s and being quite productive, 70s and 80s, and in some cases 90s, many people. Are we pushing back against the toxicity of our environment, or are you suggesting augmenting, fighting against, I guess, I doubt you'd use that metaphor, a natural process? And how do people find a source for bioidentical hormones as opposed to simply, you know, the stuff that the bad athletes in the old East Germany used?
Okay. A lot of questions. Awesome. Let me give you the answers. Yes. Thomas Jefferson was not under the environmental assault that we're under.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson was 8 years older than I am right now and arthritic. Perhaps if Thomas Jefferson had testosterone replacement in his earlier years, he wouldn't have had that arthritic condition because that comes from a lack of hormones. Hormones are misunderstood. They're not taught in the medical school because we weren't ever expected to live long enough. Then when they realized we're living long enough, the pharmaceutical companies got in there, are funding the medical schools, and 66% of all department chairs are funded by pharmaceutical grants. So they can't teach any kind of alternative. They can't teach bioidentical hormone replacement. Bioidentical hormone replacement is prescribed by Western doctors who have chosen to step back and look at the present template of health care, and I use that advisedly, disease care, and realizing it's not working. We're putting people on more and more drugs. They're not getting better. They just have to go on more and more drugs. The end is terrible. We're expecting we'll get one of the big three, heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's. So what I'm saying is, we have to live because of technology. We're living twice as long as the body ever wanted to live. So if we're going to have that time, let's replace the hormones we've lost from the aging process. Let's replace the detoxification system through glutathione nanotechnology patches, which I mention in my book. And also if you can go to my website and click on a company called LifeWave. It takes you out of my site, but it takes you to them. And you can get patches for pain, for energy, for glutathione patches, for detoxification, non-drug. Let's get off the drugs and less it's the last ditch in the practitioner's back pocket because...
I think arguably I'm taking two hormones, vitamin D and melatonin.
Great.
Suzanne,
great.
Can you stick around and take some calls from our listeners?
I can.
That would be great.
I could talk forever about vitamin D.
Okay. Just one more segment. Suzanne Summers is with us. SuzanneSummers.com, SuzanneSummers.com is her website. Her book, Breakthrough, 8 Steps to Wellness, and she'll be taking your calls right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Suzanne Summers on the line with us, the author of the new New York Times bestseller, Breakthrough, the 8 Steps to Wellness. And Suzanne, you're still with us, right?
I am, of course.
Let's pick up a few phone calls here and let our listeners talk with you rather than my getting in the way. Marjorie in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. You're on with Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, hi, Marjorie. Hi, Suzanne, and I really appreciate that you were so concerned. I also had breast cancer and have gotten arthritis, and I'm in medical school now. From what I understand, especially with rheumatoid arthritis, is that the immune system is usually protecting the body against foreign invaders like bacteria, fungus, and virus. But what happens, the immune system loses its ability to tell the difference between these invaders. So I'm trying to figure out how the hormones figure in this equation.
Well, the hormone that is I'm a filter for doctors. The hormone that they are implicating here is thyroid. And low thyroid is so often missed because they look at what is normal and say, no, you're fine, it's normal. And yet many, many, many women and men are diagnosed with MS, fibromyalgia, arthritis, lupus, and many other autoimmune diseases when really what it was low thyroid. So just from the doctors I've interviewed, before I go into medications for autoimmune, I would have your doctor check your thyroid and read up on thyroid. There's a woman by the name of Kathy Simpson. I wrote a blurb for the back of her book. I learned so much about the thyroid. She has an MS. Because she was diagnosed with all these autoimmune diseases, including arthritis, and it turned out to be low thyroid. So, you know, it's just, as lay people, if we just are taught to look in other places, too.
Yeah, I don't want to, I've got a whole bunch of callers here for you, but just very quickly, in her 50s, my mom developed arthritis. She stopped eating all the plants in the nightshade family, tomatoes, eggplants, and peppers, and potatoes. And the arthritis went away and never came back as long as she stays away from those foods. Is it possible that for some people it's just an allergic response? The body doesn't like those proteins.
And isn't that a much better solution than taking arthritis drugs?
Yeah.
That's just my point in everything. Before you go to the pharmaceutical, look elsewhere. Maybe it's nightshade. Maybe it's thyroid.
Yeah. Amy in San Diego, you're on the air with Suzanne Summers.
Hi, Suzanne. Thanks for talking to me.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you a question about hormones and regarding hair. My hair has been falling out since I was like 17, only on the top of my head. And when I was pregnant 8 years ago with my son, my hair grew great. It just filled in and my fingernails, everything was fabulous. Then after I had him, not only did the hair fall out, but it fell out to go back
to where it was before I was pregnant to make up for lost time. And I've talked to doctors, and they say nothing's wrong with my hormones. They don't know what's going on when you're pregnant. What do you suggest?
Well, of course, I never give advice, but one of the doctors I interviewed in Breakthrough is Dr. Jonathan Wright. He's a doctor who wrote the very first prescription for bioidentical hormones in the United States 23 years ago, and he's taken a lot of flack for doing so. And, you know, you have to connect dots, as we lay persons must, in that, when you were pregnant and you were making high levels of progesterone and high levels of estrogen, your hair was fine. When after the baby, when you cut that umbilical cord, all that progesterone whooshes out into the baby. So now your progesterone depleted, and probably your estrogen has gone back to levels. It sounds to me that you should go to a doctor to have who specializes in bioidentical hormone replacement.
Yeah, isn't low hypothyroidism, even if it's not clinical, you know, subclinical hypothyroidism associated with loss of hair, that.
And absolutely.
And a fetus could be producing the thyroxine and the other thyroid hormones that she was getting during her pregnancy.
Yes, and absolutely. Now, here's another thing. Mm-hmm. If a woman is in her 20s and 30s and she's losing a lot of her hair, what often is happening is too little stomach acid and pepsin, because a protein isn't digested and hair is made of protein. Stomach acid is hydrochloric acid. So there's a lot of things that could be. Hydrochloric acid is an over-the-counter supplement that from age 40 on, most people are no longer making it, and that's why women, as they go into menopause, start losing their hair. So you should look at low thyroid, overactive thyroid, low estrogen, low progesterone, or maybe it's stomach acid. You might read Dr. Wright's chapter in Breakthrough, and you'll learn a lot from him, because I can't tell you what to do, but it's tied up in there, it seems like, somewhere, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yes. What's the name of that book again? I'm sorry.
Breakthrough.
Breakthrough. This is Suzanne Summers' new book. It's a Breakthrough, Eight Steps to Wellness.
Oh, thank you so much.
Amy, got to move along. Thank you very much. Ed in Chicago, you're on with Suzanne Summers.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi there.
Thank you.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask you about the risk factors with declining hormones. I know in men, when testosterone declines, there's a correlation with high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high blood pressure, increased Alzheimer's, all the bad things. Have they shown similar risks with women as their estradiol levels decline?
Well, you know, if you notice, like we were saying earlier in the show, everything starts going wrong when your hormones start declining. It's very clear to me in my own body that as I restored myself to hormonal balance, anything that was starting to go wonky, as I say, all went back together again. My husband is on full testosterone replacement at 72, and the difference in him in the last 12 years is almost miraculous. It's like putting water into a wilting vase of tulips. I mean, he just came back to life. His shoulders straightened out. His muscles responded to workouts. The automatic putting people on Lipitor at middle age is really been a very difficult thing that has happened to men and women, but particularly men, because we need cholesterol in our body. Our brains have neurons that are made of cholesterol, and they need that cholesterol to reproduce itself. The neurons in our gut require cholesterol to reproduce themselves, and the gut is called the second brain. The gut is from the mouth to the anus, and it has a lot of thinking to do, and that's why it's called the second brain. Okay, now you've eliminated two areas of your body that require cholesterol. You're going to have some breakdown there. The third thing is that testosterone is made of cholesterol. So for a man to be taking a statin, Lipitor, Crestor, one of those statin drugs, he's denying his body's ability to produce any more testosterone. Now, his glands may still be pumping out a little, but probably not optimum, and there's no shot of making any more as he's on that cholesterol. Now, what happens when a man isn't making testosterone, the estrogen levels in the man rise higher than the testosterone, and that's when a man is really in trouble. He's in a setup for cancer there. Men start getting feminized. They grow little, breasts and their deep belly fat. And when the estrogen gets too high, that's when a man becomes impotent. So
estrogen is as important a component for men in the right ratio as testosterone is for women. It's just that your ratio is testosterone to estrogen. So, you know, it's all explained in Breakthrough. Not that I want you to, you know, I'm not trying to sell books. It's just that it's all in there, and I learned this from talking to these doctors, and I see what's happened to my husband, and he's got his ratio of testosterone to estrogen just perfect. And he's got his cholesterol down without statins by eliminating oils. I never knew that the oils that oxidize the bad cholesterol are omega-6 oils, corn oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, vegetable oil, peanut oil, canola oil are all omega-6 oils that oxidize your cholesterol and raise that bad LDH. When you eliminate those oils and go to olive oil, and you can, on high heat, cook with coconut oil, take a spoonful of flax oil every morning and another swig of cod liver oil, or you can take it in supplement form, omega-3 oils.
Fish oils.
You're doing more for your body than any statin could ever do. And if your cholesterol is still high, even making those changes because your diet has not been on track all these years, usually unknowingly, then they have an over-the-counter supplement called red yeast rice, which is what Lipitor is made from. It's from the Orient, and what they do with red yeast rice to make Lipitor is to alter the molecular structure to get a patent to turn it into a chemical. You can take the natural form short-term until you get the cholesterol down to where you want. But the real problem that all the doctors have told me in interviewing for Breakthrough is not cholesterol. You want to keep that LDL low by changing oils, but the real problem is inflammation. And inflammation is where you're going to get your heart disease. So in order to test for inflammation, there's an incredible test called highly sensitive CRP, C-reactive protein. It can tell you exactly how much inflammation you have in your body, and if your inflammation is high, it should be around 0.5 if it's way up there. Then they do two more blood tests that you have to ask for, if they don't know, called IL, 6 and IL-1 beta, which will pinpoint exactly where it is.
Right, all of which is in your book. Suzanne, I got a board full of calls here for you. Can you stick around for one more segment, or do you have...
I can.
You can? Great. Okay, we will wrap up the hour then with this. I find it fascinating stuff. Apparently you do too, because we've got calls from the East Coast to the West Coast and a whole bunch in between. We'll be right back, 45 minutes past the hour. Suzanne Summers with us.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Suzanne Summers on the line with us. Her new book, Breakthrough, 8 Steps to Wellness. Her website, Suzanne Summers, SOMERS.com. And Suzanne, before we get to the calls, host prerogative here. I'm in my 50s. You're in your 60s. Your husband's in his 70s. Of the 3 million plus people who are listening to this show, I'll bet a whole bunch of them are in their 20s and 30s and 40s. Is this relevant to them?
Oh, yeah. The reason it's relevant, that's like anesthesia,
yeah.
I can't say. I interviewed Dr. Russell Blaylock and a neuroscientist. He said, you know, Suzanne, you and I are baby boomers, and we grew up on real food, and halfway through our lives, we were introduced to chemicals, preservatives, TV dinners, chemical household cleaners, and environmental chemicals and pollution. He said, and we are sick, very sick. He said, young people, for the most part, have been introduced to chemicals starting in the womb in many cases by well-meaning mothers drinking diet soda, thinking they were doing something good for their body and their babies by not gaining weight. He said, so they've grown up with chemicals starting in the womb. And he said, in the next 20 years, because of the chemical intake of young people, we're going to have total care for 30-year-olds with dementia. So what I try to teach in Breakthrough is catch on to what's happening earlier and earlier. Understand that every time you take a pharmaceutical drug. Every time you eat chemical food, every time you take a big whiff of chemicals in your house or clean with household cleaners or clean with chemicals or swim in fluoridated water, there's going to be at some point a tipping point. We of middle age on have reached our tipping point. I fear the young people are going to reach it a lot sooner than us, and we're already seeing we're putting children on Lipitor.
Yep.
We've got an epidemic of ADD and autism. So this is
obesity.
About them.
Yeah,
this is
I think you're the in some ways the Adele Davis of this generation. You know, the one who waved the flag back 30 years ago about vitamins and nutrients. Donna in Denver, you're on the air with Suzanne Summers.
Hi there. Suzanne.
Hi.
Really nice to hear you on the radio, and I really support what you're doing.
Thank you. My problem
came when I tried to find a doctor that would give me the bioidentical hormones that you're talking about.
Right.
And found out that even though I do have health insurance, probably one of the last 10 people in the United States, none of those doctors accept insurance.
Well, there are some doctors who are now accepting it. Now, I can help you access bioidentical hormones in the following way. If you go to my website and click on Life Extension, Life Extension is a nonprofit organization that I asked the editor, Bill Falloon, if he would do this for me and for my readers and listeners. I said, they're having trouble getting access to bioidentical hormones. Here's what they will do for you. If you request a female hormone blood test, if your husband wants it, he would request a male hormone blood test. Or they said they also have a blood test for a weight loss hormone blood test, meaning that if you're having trouble losing weight, they will be able to tell through this special blood test what is going on in your metabolism that is holding on to the weight. Usually these tests can be around $1,000. For my readers and listeners, this has nothing to do with me. They're going to do it for $129. Then, when the results come back, you call them, the number they give you, they will interpret the results. One of the doctors on call will interpret the results to you and then refer you to a doctor in your area who specializes and qualifies to administer
bioidentical hormones. So it's basically a network of people who do this kind of stuff that is growing out of presumably consumer demand.
If they don't pay for it, my hormones for me, now everyone's a little different depending on what you need, but I take estrogen, progesterone, thyroid, and bioidentical cortisol. I spend about $65 to $85 a month. It's so crucial to my health that I would try to find something in my life I could do without to be able to afford that if your insurance won't pay for it. That's how important it is. I wish all the insurance paid for it. I wish there was a fund that all women could access because all of us who are on bioidentical hormones have a better shot at living a long life in good health than not.
Sherry.
I hope that helps.
Thank you. Is it Sherry or Cherry in Santa Rosa, California?
Oh, Cherry.
Cherry, thank you.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, it's really good to hear you. I've had your book in my office for years. I've been practicing menopause medicine for about 15 years since I started having hot flashes and found nothing in the medical literature to talk about it.
We must be around the same age.
I've been really impressed with what I call and tell patients about is the psychoactive effects of hormones. Every hormone has its own effect on the brain, on your mood, on your behavior, on your activities, who you want to go out with. And what I see is that the high hormone levels between 15 and 45 really make a woman's brain want to reproduce. After menopause, what I see is that the lower hormone levels predispose a woman's brain to become more of a teacher, more of a person who writes books, runs for Congress, and this is called in the literature, it's the grandmother hypothesis, that it's the postmenopausal women on lower hormones who are really the only group that transmits culture.
We have about 30 seconds here, Cherry and Suzanne.
I agree with all that. The thing is, with chemicals and stress, so many women are just no longer making hormones. There are always a few that do. There's so many that don't. I'm going for wisdom, perspective, and I like the sexual part of my life. But that's a choice.
Yeah, and it's a choice you can learn more about by reading Breakthrough, Suzanne Summers' new book, or website, Suzanne Summers, SOMERS.com. Suzanne, thanks for dropping by today.
It was great. I so appreciate it, Tom.
It's been a fascinating, fascinating segment. Thank you so much.
Let's do it again. There's a hunger for this information.
I look forward to it. Thank you again. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be broadcasting live from the belly of the beast, CPAC 2009 in Washington, D.C. And Christy Harvey from the Center for American Progress is going to drop by with all the news sliding under the radar. So be back. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.